generally, that is important to me. Talking with people and people who are knowledgeable, people I can call up. Bell Labs is a sizable segment of that, but it's not the whole picture of the people, of all the various people that I do contact and call with. But Bell Labs is a sizable segment. I might mention one other aspect of it that may be of interest to you. When I went on sabbatical in 55, 56, I first, during the summer, I traveled around Europe a good deal. And then in the fall, I settled down in Paris and worked at the École Normale Supérieure, the French physicist that I knew pretty well, did nice work. And one of my students had gone over to work with him as a postdoc. And when I got there, I asked him, well, what are you doing now? And so on, and he told me he was working on spin resonance, and he had found the material where the relaxation time of spin was very, very long, over 10 or 20 seconds. You flip the spin one way in silicon, and then it would take a long time to go back the other direction. Well, the two directions have different energies, and this allows one then to, like a maser, solid-state maser. I said, gee, that would be a very convenient subject for a substance for solid-state maser, which would be tunable and it would be a good amplifier. And why don't we try that out? So I tried it out there. Well, he didn't have quite the right material, or enough of it. So during the winter, I had to make a trip back to the States anyhow. I went back to Bell Labs, contacted my friend there, Jim Gordon, and this is a solid state physicist there who worked in spin resonances. Trouble with names. He's since gone down to California, San Diego. In any case, I contacted two of them and said, well, you know, I think I have a very interesting idea Bell Labs would be interested in, you may want to work on, but I need some material to work in Paris, and I'll be there for about 3 months now. I've got only 3 months to work in Paris, but if you could give me some material, I guess I phoned them about this beforehand. You give me some material, I'd like to work on it, and then after I've left Paris, you're free to work on it and do whatever you like with it. And they agreed, well, that's fine. And so I told them about the possibility of solid state maser, and they produced this material for me, and took that back in Paris, and we tried it out. We never quite made it oscillate. We got some modest amplification, but it never quite made it oscillate before I had to leave. I went to Japan after that, rescheduled. And then Gordon and this other physicist worked on some of their labs. So there was a very close interaction in just this field. Yeah. You see, I knew the people and I trusted Bell Labs, and they were helpful in that. So the community there was very helpful to me. Now, it turned out that Bloombergen read about our work and had a still improved idea, namely a three-level system. Mm-hmm. And he suggested that. In the meantime, somebody at Bell Labs had also had this idea of a three-level system. Mm. And they got the wind that Bloombergen was interested in something that sounded awfully like this, and so they contacted him, in my understanding, and they talked together and agreed to give Bloombergen patent rights outside of the Bell Labs. And they would get the patent. Bell Labs could use it for you, but otherwise it would be Bloomberg's property. And then the first one was actually made at Bell Labs, so they were already kind of buying those books. Mm-hmm. Bloomberg was competing with them to make the first one, but then to Bell Labs on the first one. First year on the maker system. So those are very concrete examples of that kind of collaboration and information for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit more, maybe I might say. My interaction with Bell Labs. Is that back on again?
Yes, yeah. It's on. Yes, as I think about it, I guess my interaction with Bell Labs really has not faded very much, because I'm still in good contact with the friends there and the people who are doing things. As I started working in the infrared region for astronomy, I was doing heterodyne work. Now, and part of the things that I have been doing has grown out of the application of new technology to science, because I've been close enough to technology to see some of the possibilities, and particularly astronomers don't always see those things, mm-hmm. and they're not often close to technology frequently. But I am enough that I can see the potentialities and tend to use new technology and introduce them into science and into astronomy and to other fields too. I was doing heterodyne detection of the infrared, which was quite new for astronomy,
uh-huh.
and using lasers and using very fast detectors. Patel from Bell Laboratories has invented a kind of a spin laser, which is tunable and produces infrared. He invented the CO2 laser, which we use as our primary source. He also had a tunable laser, and he came out to Kitt Peak and worked with us a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Looking at the possibility of applying that. We tried it a little bit. That didn't work too well, so we went back to CO2 lasers, but it was well worth trying. I continue to get help. I call on those people, and they also, I hope, get a little help and a few suggestions from me from time to time. There's a good deal of interaction. Now, the whole field of infrared astronomy is an interesting case, because that really has been opened up by the efforts of the military and industry in developing technology. First, the development of solid-state technology and possibly manufacturing and controlling things accurately, and the military interest in imaging the infrared and detecting infrared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And industry, of course, has helped develop that. Now, there is a communications interest in the infrared, near infrared at least. But the detectors which previously could be used were so primitive that there's relatively little astronomy that could be done with them. Some astronomy, uh-huh. but relatively little. Now, they're wonderful. Very high quantum efficiency. And I think a near infrared is a more fruitful area for astronomy, basically, because of that. And the visible region now, and a lot of astronomy is moving into that region. I myself have been working in the mid-infrared and the far-infrared.
Mm-hmm.
And again, those use specialized detectors. The imaging detectors are getting to be in very common use in astronomy. Right now, I'm doing interferometry with two separate telescopes, using heterodyne detection on each telescope in the mid-infrared, that is 10 microns. There we need very sensitive detectors and very fast detectors. We want detectors with bandwidths many gigahertz wide. And they're not easy. They've been developed in industry. And I've worked with several industries who've been very generous in giving me detectors to try out and use.
Uh-huh.
And there's a chap at Bell Labs now who's got a new kind of detector using quantum wells. It's clearly very fast and possibly quite sensitive. He's giving us some samples and
uh-huh.
helping us out. But that's not the only industry that I contact. Santa Barbara industry works especially in infrared. It's giving us some detectors. And the General Electric people are giving us detectors occasionally too.